Content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Grace Payden for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Religion News Service, the Washington Post, and Fave News. First of all, an article from the Religion News Service published on April 24, entitled Muslim rideshare drivers improvise prayer spaces amid lack of relief stations in New York City, by Tori Lucking, New York. A deli in Midtown is more than just a spot to grab a bite to eat. It is a place of prayer. Rather than selecting a bag of chips off the shelf, Muhammad Ahmed spreads out a small rug on the floor in the corner and offers worship. For Ahmed and thousands of Muslim rideshare drivers like him, finding friendly establishments open to hosting daily prayers is a constant and necessary project in a city notoriously bereft of public bathrooms, parking spots, and private spaces. Like many devout Muslims, Ahmed prays five times a day at set times and beforehand performs a detailed act of ablution, cleansing with clean water known as wada. For him and other Muslim Uber and Lyft drivers in the city, this daily prayer obligation and the associated rituals have a big impact on their driving. If I don't find parking, then I don't have any other option, so I skip one prayer, and then for the next prayer, I offer both prayers at one time, said Ahmed. New York City, home to the iconic yellow taxicab, has long relied on cars for hire. But the rapid growth of rideshare companies, there are now nearly 80,000 rideshare drivers compared to 13,587 taxis in the city, has exacerbated accommodation challenges. The New York City Department of Transportation provides 38 relief stands in Manhattan, where drivers can park their cars for up to 1 hour. However, the stands often have only 2 to 4 parking spots each, and only 19 of the stands can legally be used by rideshare drivers. And that has only been true since 2017, when the Independent Drivers Guild, IDG, a group that fights for drivers' rights in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Massachusetts, and Illinois, advocated for for-hire vehicle stands in the city. Before that, only taxi drivers were allowed to use any of the relief stands. While the exact number of Muslims among the city's rideshare drivers is unknown, about one-third of New York City's yellow cabs are driven by Muslims. IDG knows many of its members are Muslim. Its office, located in Long Island City, has both the Wada station where drivers can perform their ablution, as well as dedicated prayer room with prayer rugs. We built the center with drivers in mind to give them a nice rest area, a wudu area, and a prayer room that they can access anytime they want to. It is a step in the right direction, but it doesn't solve the overall problem, said Aziz Ba, organizing director of IDG New York and National. Originally from Senegal, Ba, who is Muslim, began driving rideshare vehicles in New York City in 2012 and knows the struggle of accommodating daily prayer while driving. When you get to the Central Business District in Manhattan, it gets super complicated to find a spot, said Ba. You just go in a circle until you miss your prayer time, or you might just risk parking somewhere really quickly to go pray, and you come back and there is a $115 ticket waiting for you. If there is no mosque nearby, drivers like Ahmed, who makes his wada and prays at the Midtown Deli, are forced to find other suitable spaces. This is particularly an issue at airports, where rideshare drivers must be on standby in waiting areas, often located in garages and parking lots far from running water. A group of Muslim rideshare drivers at Newark Airport improvised a wada station to perform their wada by attaching a tap to a rain barrel and filling it with bottled water. It sits on a small table next to a semi-permanent tent meant for prayer. While this makeshift tap does the trick, it is only a band-aid to a bigger issue, according to Sohail Rana, Deputy Director of IDG for New Jersey and Connecticut. Having a bathroom is not even a luxury. It is a necessity for people. And people who bring so much money to the city and pay taxes and fees deserve a proper system where they can park their vehicle and have a restroom available, said Rana. Arifa Tirmizi, an organizer at IDG, has been a rideshare driver since 2016. She says IDG's advocacy to secure more relief stands, bathrooms, and rest and prayer areas is vital for drivers' well-being. Those things really help us because we actually have peace of mind and know they're located on a map. We can park over there, and then we can run to the bathroom and make our wada, said Tirmizi. According to Ba, IDG met with the New York City Department of Transportation last month to continue the conversation about fixing the lack of relief stands in Manhattan. One idea that I floated was for the DOT to develop something like a parking pass and to connect with the Park NYC app, said Ba. The DOT also suggested a tentative plan to place more relief stands around city-owned parks, said Ba, so drivers could easily access public bathrooms inside the parks. Ahmed would like to see the city take distance into consideration with regard to building out more relief stations. There should be at least one restroom within a square mile of the relief stand where we can go, said Ahmed. He would also like to see dedicated prayer spaces in the city. For Tirmizi, the issue comes down to respect. We need people to be considerate because we as Muslims are also part of this community. We are also people of color. We are also citizens of the United States. And most importantly, we are also humans. Now an article from the Religion News Service published on April 24, entitled, New Study Suggests Thinking About God Can Make People More Generous to Outsiders, by Bob Smetana. Religion is often seen as a source of conflict, giving insiders a source of community and support while drawing boundaries against outsiders. A new study suggests religion can also prompt people to be generous to outsiders, even those from groups they distrust. For this study, entitled Thinking About God Encourages Pro-Sociality Toward Religious Outgroups, researchers asked more than 4,700 people in the United States, the Middle East, and Fiji if they were willing to share money with people from a different religious group. Asking those participants about God or about what God wanted them to do led to an 11% increase in giving, according to the study, which was published in Psychological Science. That result surprised some of the researchers, including Michael Pasek, assistant professor of psychology at the University of Illinois, Chicago, and one of the lead authors of the study. Some suspected prompting participants to think about God would make them more generous to people from their own religious group, but not outsiders. Others thought that thinking about God would increase generosity across the board. For the study, researchers recruited participants from Muslim, Hindu, Christian, and Jewish communities to take part in a series of behavioral economics experiments. During the experiments, research assistants gave people small amounts of money in large envelopes. Participants were also given two smaller envelopes, one labeled Mine and the other labeled Give to Another Person. They could keep all the money for themselves, give it all away, or divide it up. Those who wanted to give money away could put funds into the envelope labeled Give to Another Person. That envelope was then placed back in the larger envelope. Participants were first told to do whatever they thought best when dividing the money. Later, They repeated the experiment after being asked either to think about God or to think about what God wanted them to do. The experiments in Fiji and some of the experiments in the Middle East were done in person. Others, in the United States and Israel, were done online. All the money that was designated give to another person was given away. In person, they gave people a large envelope with money in it as well as two smaller envelopes. While participants made the decisions, the research assistant would step away so no one would know what participants were doing. We always made sure that people were assigned with different people across rounds so their earlier decisions couldn't influence their later decisions, said Pasek. Azim Sharif, director of the Center for Applied Moral Psychology at the University of British Columbia and one of the lead authors of the study, has taken part in a previous study about religion and social behavior, including a 2007 study entitled God is Watching You and a 2019 study on religion and selfishness. He said past studies have found thinking about God is linked with higher levels of giving to strangers. But he has long wondered about whether that giving is directed only toward people who are like the giver, or will they give to people from other groups, especially groups they distrust or fear. This study allowed researchers to look at that issue. They found no difference in increased giving to in-groups or out-groups. Sharif said the study is the result of two different teams of researchers working together. The two groups had different expectations for how the experiment would turn out. For his part, Sharif expected that giving to strangers from the same group would be higher than giving to people from a different group. Other researchers expected a different outcome. One of the problems in science is that you have to get rid of confirmation bias, he said. That is really hard to do when everyone believes the same thing. He also said asking specifically about God, rather than a religious identity, was important to the study. So researchers asked people to think about what God wanted them to do, rather than what a good member of their religious group might do. Sharif said it is often hard to isolate the God bit of religion, because ethnicity and culture often play a major role in how religion is lived out. While religious people tend to give more to both secular and faith-based charities, it's hard to tell whether religion makes people more generous or if people who are more generous tend to join religious groups. The study suggests that perhaps the God bit of part of religion isn't to blame for antisocial behavior, he said. That's an important finding, said Pasek, because religion is often seen as a driver of conflict. But the reality might be more complicated. Some aspects of religion, he said, might promote more tolerance. He said that other research indicates a belief in God can decrease the extent to which people dehumanize out-group members. Jeremy Genges, a professor of psychology at New School for Social Research, and one of the researchers on the project, said he wanted to test whether belief in God is associated with cooperation and benevolence across group lines. Trading ideas across different groups is important to human beings, he said, and it would be strange if belief in God was a barrier to such trade. He said the biggest takeaway was that religious diversity poses no barrier to cooperation. This is important because the idea that belief in God is associated with intergroup hostility is quite widespread and often used as a cudgel against immigration and against specific religious groups such as Muslims, he said. The next article from Fave News was published on April 21 and is entitled The Sikhs Next Door and Across the Border, written by Julia Duen. The sight of two turbaned soldiers on black stallions posed next to a wood-framed Canadian frontier-style building is a clear hint that Sikhs have a long history in the Pacific Northwest. The soldier statues outside the Sikh Heritage Museum in Abbotsford, a Vancouver suburb, represent the first Sikhs to visit Western Canada, members of the British Regiment in Hong Kong, who traveled across the country in 1902 for the coronation of Edward VII. Today, there are about 800,000 Sikhs in Canada, the most of any country outside its birthplace of India, and April is celebrated as Sikh Heritage Month. The 250,000 Sikhs in British Columbia make the faith the province's second largest religious group, after Christians. Worldwide, the Sikh faith, which dates back to the 16th century, is the fifth largest in the world, with some 26 million followers. In the United States, which has about 500,000 Sikhs, they are also concentrated mostly on the West Coast, where Sikhs emigrated a century ago, often coming for jobs. They quickly moved into farming, mining, and lumber industries in both countries. Manka Dhingra, an attorney based in Redmond, Washington, became the first U.S. Sikh woman to be elected to a state legislature in 2017, when she won a seat in the state Senate. The museum in Abbotsford tells of the ordeal Sikhs have suffered through the centuries. On its west side is a large bronze sculpture showing Punjabi Sikhs battling Mughals, a Muslim dynasty that ruled northern India between the 16th and 19th centuries. On the east side is a paved courtyard with benches and a series of panels titled Racism Meets Reliance. It chronicles a three-month-long standoff in mid-1914 when the Komagata Maru, a steamship whose 376 passengers were predominantly Sikhs, was stranded in the Burrard Inlet and not allowed to dock due to racist attitudes, despite many of the passengers having served in the British Armed Forces. The ship was forced to sail to India, where 200 of the surviving passengers ended up in prison. Word of this incident spread, but little was done for decades. A letter of apology from the Provincial Legislative Assembly, dated May 23, 2008, hangs in the museum. Stephen Harper, then Prime Minister of Canada, did apologize to a gathering of Sikhs, but it wasn't until 2016 that Prime Minister Justin Trudeau formally apologized in Parliament. On the top floor of the museum building is the Gur Sikh Temple, the oldest Sikh house of worship in North America, founded by families who had moved to the area from India. It was a farming community, said Alicia Mahill, coordinator of the South Asian Studies Institute for the University of the Fraser Valley. Back in India, land holdings were shrinking, and there was opportunity here. Word of a good life in the New World drew the rural poor from around the globe. Near the museum entrance is a pole called a Nishan Sahib, atop which flies the Sikh flag. In its early days, a light was mounted on it to alert Sikh immigrants in the United States, whose border is close to downtown Abbotsford, that it was safe to come visit their Canadian brethren. Across the street, a much larger Gurdwara, the Khalsa Diwan Society, is open all day and serves free vegetarian meals on the ground floor. Upstairs, there are screens with Sikh text in Punjabi with English translations. The vast room is all in blue carpet with a blue and gold dome ceiling and a platform up front with Sikh scriptures under ornate fabric. The Gurdwara is just one strand in Vancouver's rich religious tapestry. Along the number 5 road in Richmond, a suburb close to Vancouver Airport, are some 20 houses of worship in a single mile on what's informally known as the Highway to Heaven. Buddhist temples, a small Hindu worship space, a large Shia mosque, numerous Chinese language churches, a Jewish school, and a Christian school, and another Sikh Gurdwara. Abbotsford's museum shows how long and twisting the history of Number 5 Road's diversity has been. Our last article is an excerpt from the Washington Post piece entitled At Thai Temple, Members Bond with Dance and Music, published on April 26 and written by Elisa Tang. At her Thai Buddhist temple in Silver Spring, Maryland, Maitini Pramawat went to a closet filled with gilded headdresses and performance supplies and found what she needed. Thin, decorative red cones topped with pom-poms. As her students filed into practice, they changed into loose-fitting red pants, capped their fingers with the cones, then went through a dance they planned to perform at the temple's biggest festival since the pandemic began. Under her direction, they pinched pointer and thumb together, fanning out the rest of their fingers, forming the jeeb hand gesture, a key element of traditional Thai dance, then gracefully extended their arms and released the pinch in a fluid motion accentuated by the pom-poms. These women, like a growing number of Americans coming from an array of ethnic backgrounds, including African American, Native American, Vietnamese, and Lao. But the thread that binds them is Thai. Each has at least one Thai parent and spent most weekends of their childhoods at Wat Thai, Washington, D.C., the region's largest Thai temple in Silver Spring, learning the language, sharing spicy meals, and bonding through traditional music and dance. Pramawat, whose mother is African American and whose father is Thai, was three when her father, also a traditional Thai dancer, and a Muay Thai fighter, began taking her to the temple to learn the language and performance arts. Thai dancing was a sense of identity, pride, fun, hanging out with your friends, said Pramawat, 44, a Silver Spring resident who works in human resources. As I got older, it meant giving back and really supporting the community. After college, she assisted her dance teacher, and later she became the temple's dance teacher. For the performance on April 16, she chose for her students a dance from Isan, the northeastern region of Thailand. The temple's Thai New Year festival is a party open to all, with food, dance, and music to celebrate Songkran, the biggest Thai holiday of the year. In Thailand, Songkran, also known as the Water Festival, is celebrated nationwide as a fun week-long water fight. The holiday falls in April, the hottest month of the year, just before the arrival of the monsoon rains. The dance Pramawat selected for her students is meant to invoke the rains. Being blessed by rain, hopefully not during this show, is always a sign of good luck, said Pramawat, who also performed for Songkran with another dance group. This dance has upbeat, lively music, so I thought, what a way to rock it out by using this dance. Across the United States, temples serve as Thai American community centers, where adults born in Thailand bring their children, either born in America or simply Americanized, to keep their language and traditions alive. Wat Thai D.C. began in 1974 when two monks moved into a house on Wayne Avenue in Silver Spring, and since 1986 has been in its current location, 13440 Lay Hill Road, said Pramana Rungwet Taite, 52, one of nine monks living at the temple. It is the oldest and largest Thai temple in the D.C., Maryland, and Virginia region, with 2,500 congregants, Taite said. There are approximately 12,000 Thais in the region, according to the 2015 census. For Imlek, Wat Thai D.C. gave her a first taste of formal education. Her parents, who were farmers in Thailand, left her with family when they immigrated to work at a relative's Thai restaurant in Wheaton. When she was brought to join them at age 5, the temple helped to keep her rooted. And it kept me connected at a time when I moved to a whole new country that spoke a totally different language, said Imlek, now 28, a physical therapist working with MedStar and living in Silver Spring. Aniena Nguyen, born to a Vietnamese father and Thai mother, has been going to the temple since she was 4. It started off with my mom wanting to find a way for me to preserve my Thai culture, said Nguyen, a 27-year-old Rockville resident who designs custom closets. As I grew older, you get to that rebellious age. You don't want to do it anymore. But my mom was in that generation of parents that was like, no, you're going to go to the temple and you're going to learn this. In high school, Nguyen came to value her temple education, and after college, she returned to help teach. Then came COVID. In March 2020, just before Sokran, the temple shut down for the sake of the well-being of the monks living there. No visitors were allowed, and all the typical activities increase, said Tai Tay, who has lived at the temple since 1998. For some congregants, the closure created a sudden void. I had this routine of going to the temple every weekend, and I kind of feel like how everybody else felt, somewhat disconnected, Pramawat said. A place that used to be so lively and open was completely shut down. Moon Kung, who is of Thai, Lao, and Native American descent, spent the pandemic watching YouTube for Thai news that she used to pick up at the temple. I miss being around aunties yelling in the kitchen. I miss my friends and talking about what's going and happening in Thailand, she said, nearly bursting with excitement about the return of the festival. When I found out that Sokran was happening, I was like, yes, our time to connect with our community, connect with ourselves. We have run out of time for today's session of Religion in the News. I hope that you'll listen next time and that you've enjoyed it. I'm Mary Grace Payden, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.